brothers have left.
Blog Talk Radio.
There are so many dehumanizing elements. Concerned about removing. Ultimately, we are concerned about a guaranteed annual income. And the other thing I think it is very necessary to say is that everybody's on welfare in this country. And when it comes to black people and poor people, we just call it something else. When it's for white people and rich, we call it subsidies.
Motherless households are more common in the black community. A survey from the American Consensus Institution revealed that 67% of black children under 18 in the U.S. live in homes without fathers. This is a stark contrast to white children, as only 24% of them live in fatherless homes. But it wasn't always like that. The black family survived generations of open racism, widespread poverty, and slavery. They lived through segregation and violence, and strong family bonds used to be the norm.
As of 1960, two-thirds of all black American children were living with both parents. That declined over the years until only one-third were living with both parents in 1995. So it's not the legacy of slavery that destroys the African American
family. It's the legacy of the welfare state.
Between 1890 and 1950, the marriage rate was much higher among black women than white women. A fraction of black children lived in homes without their fathers. But everything changed with the expansion of the welfare state. It divided the house and created the dependency on welfare. This kind of reminds me of what President Reagan said.
I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
So, what happened? What's the mechanism? Here is a detailed look at how the welfare state played a role in the dissolving of the family structure over the years. People say that the breakdown of traditional family units, family structures, is a byproduct of black poverty, not just because there is no man to support the family financially, but also because women tend to earn less than men on average. Of course, the connection between the two is there, but it goes deeper than that. Welfare was a mean little business. It was designed to get people by in a pinch. Public assistance programs, like welfare entitlements, have been a part of American culture since the 1940s. Unfortunately, like in many other aspects of government institutions, black Americans were left out. In time, black people could also get financial support, but it wasn't easy. Mothers who applied for checks had to let social workers inspect their homes to see if their conditions were suitable for welfare. These workers also had to make sure no man was living in the house. But even if they qualified for support, the amount they received was meager and not enough to build a stable life. In the early 1960s, welfare was not yet common. Even in the most impoverished black communities, in the decade that followed, the number of black people on welfare went up by 169%, a further increase by 30% from 1970 to 1975. In 1972, New York City, almost one out of every six residents was on welfare. A major portion of these households were black. Although black people were only around a tenth of all Americans, they made up almost 50% of all welfare recipients by the late 70s. A recent UNICEF report showed that many children under 18 in America struggle financially, and African American children are nearly four times more likely to be in poverty than white children. Though the number of families receiving cash assistance has decreased since 1996, child poverty rates for black children in the U.S. remain high. This outcome is not by accident. I studied the evolution of social welfare policies in the U.S. from the New Deal to the 1996 reforms and found that these policies have been discriminatory from the start. And a lot of people can confess to that. This led many black families to fall into cultural and economic ruin. In a short period, healthy black people started relying on government assistance to achieve some level of normalcy. But within the city slums, that normalcy was impossible to get. Black children barely knew their fathers, and most were raised by unemployed and unmarried mothers stuck in a cycle of poverty and modest paychecks. This marked a significant shift in black American history. The consequences were severe for the next generation. Let's start with the Social Security Act of 1935. It was introduced during Franklin Roosevelt's administration. It was designed to create the safety net.
All right. Greetings, family. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we just wanted to do kind of a little review of some of the things that people have talked about over the years. And that, of course, includes what you just heard, the situation of welfare and so forth and so on. But notice the very first thing that was said. That was actually Dr. Martin Luther King talking about how When it comes to black folks, it's called welfare. When it comes to other people, it's called subsidies. Well, again, we have to look very closely and examine how we latch on to what other people say in terms of what is actual. And so with that said, we're going to begin to look closer at what it is we need to do today in terms of reparatory justice. Now, note, reparatory justice / reparations is not welfare. It is not a handout. It is not none of this other government stuff that have happened and that people have been talking about and are doing. Reparatory justice / reparations is about what is due. So for those who say, well, you know, I don't want to, that's fine. That's fine. But don't get in the way of others because, again, and here is the kind of example that we give. If you're hit by a car, you're walking on the sidewalk, the car, for whatever reason, comes up on the sidewalk and hits you. You are injured. You can either get a broken leg, broken arm. Who knows? It could be even worse. So with that said, you have been injured, and you've been injured in such a way where you did not cause that. What that means in real life and in real time is you must be compensated, or you're in place to be compensated, needless to say. So now, people of African descent, i.e. black folks here in the U.S., have been injured severely. We're talking about death-wise and so forth. Therefore, compensation is not only necessary, it is required and mandated. And so with MWM now, we proceed in that manner. And with that said, we strive for full emancipation, of course, reparatory justice all across the board, and all things that go along with that. So, again, family, greetings to this segment of New Day. Tonight we're going to talk about the need for there to be, raising the bar is one of the things that we're talking about, raising the bar in every regard. When we talk about justice, when we talk about liberation, it is time to raise the bar. And so tonight we're going to begin to look at what do we need to do to begin to make this thing happen. It has been at least 100 years. From the time of the Honorable Marcus Garvey to present day, we can pretty much document very well some very key things. And with that, see some of the advancements, see some of the things that our people have been able to accomplish in the past 100 years on our own. And so if that could happen 100 years ago, why is it we have all this complication today with being able to sustain real viable businesses, our own educational systems, institutions, our own cultural, our own financial? Well, why can't we sustain that today? Well, we know the answers, but what we now have to look at is what are we going to do to make sure that it happens? So tonight's program and future programs is going to focus on that. Tonight we're going to talk with our sister Tawanda Jones, who hasn't been with us for a while, but we're going to talk with her to get our Be More report. We want to know what's going on in some of our sister cities, and Baltimore is one of our sister cities. But we're going to also talk with a brother who is new to our program, and we're going to talk with him about the idea concept of community village development, but also nation building. Because, again, if we're not focusing on that in this day and age, I dare say, see ya and don't want to be ya. For real. I mean, listen, we can do a lot of things, and we do. But if that's not one of the things that we're talking about doing and really striving for, our own land, our own government, yes, I said it. We must begin to look at how are we going to establish, formulate, and advance our own governments, our own systems. And so that is where we're at, family. So, again, tonight we're going to talk with Sister Tawanda Jones, but we're going to also, again, talk to a brother who, again, is new to New Day, and his name is Brother Asifa Bey, and he is with the Tribal Village down there in Florida. All right, family, that's all what we're going to cover tonight. I also want to give you a quick update on a few things. For those who have not heard, Baba Sekou Odinga is unfortunately, you know, in a state of, he has to, you know, deal with some illnesses, some health situations, and there is a call being put out to provide some assistance to him and the family. I'm going to give you some of that information as we proceed. And, again, talking about our political prisoners, we should not just be looking at August, Black August, as a time to focus on our political prisoners. So next month, for October, we're going to do some sessions that focuses on Iman Jamil Al-Amin, of course, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and also Sister Reverend Joy Powell. We're going to be focusing on what we can now begin to do to assist further in their freedom. We're going to also talk more about, of course, next month, Million Woman March Week, and Million Woman March Month is really coming next Saturday. We are, of course, going to give you a lot of information about what's coming up for Million Woman March Week. We'll be able to give you times, locations, topics, where you can register and get involved for the entire week. It'll be happening here in Philly, but you'll also be able to join some of the sessions online. And then on the 23rd, we'll be heading into the D.C. area because we are building now this Million Woman March Universal Movement. We are building it and getting it ready to go worldwide. So the first session here in the U.S. is going to take place in Philly and in D.C. We're looking at doing what we call now action assemblies. So sisters will be able to sign up for the task forces and some of the other strategy sessions and think tanks and so forth that's now being put in place. We're really now organizing. Now, with that said, and I see Sister Tawanda is ready. I see her in queue. We're going to bring her in a few moments. But I see, again, family, that we are ready to move forward. For those of you who are in business, sisters who are in business or who want to be in business, we now have something ready for you. Our new website is ready, finally. Give thanks to Brother David, who has helped us in developing our website. And those sisters who are now in business or want to be in business, or if you have a product or something, we now have a website where we are introducing what we call doing business with the divine and the righteous USA, the United Sisters of Africa. You now will have your own capability to be a part of our network. You'll be able now to be a member of the sisterhood that deals with economic development, finance, advancement, and wealth building. That means you will be able to have your own web page on our site for your business. I'm going to give you more information about that very shortly. But we now have our own network that is being put in place with the coming of a directory, Black Women, African Women's Businesses, Goods and Services. Yes, our own directory. And then for next year, it'll be an international directory. In March, we're looking to present an international directory of Africana women's businesses worldwide. March is Women's History Month. We're going to make women's history for real. All right, family, listen, let's move forward. We're going to get ready to bring in our sister, Tawanda Jones. And again, it's been a while since she's been with us here on New Day physically, but she's always with us spiritually. And, you know, every week when we talk about $2 Tuesday, well, that was Sister Tawanda Jones that came up with that for us, and we've continued it every since. But what we want to do now, again, Baltimore is one of our sister cities, and we're going to be kicking off the Harriet Tubman. Now, note, next year will mark the 175th year of Harriet Tubman Araminta. That was her first name, so you hear us make reference to Araminta, because before she became officially Harriet Tubman, she was Araminta, and she was doing the thing even then. So, again, next year marks the 175th year of Araminta / Harriet Tubman coming to Philadelphia, obtaining her freedom. But she came from the state of Maryland, and, of course, Baltimore is known as Tubman City. So we're going to kick things off this December, as we did a few years ago. We're going to kick some things off in Baltimore. So Baltimore is one of our sister cities, and you will now hear us talk about some of the projects and upcoming events for each of our sister cities. So without further ado, we're going to bring in our sister Tawanda Jones. She's going to tell us what's been going on in Bmore kind of in the past couple of months or so, and also how we're going to get ready to now build in Tubman City. So let's do this. Let's bring in our sister. Hey, greetings, Sister Tawanda. How are you this evening?
Hey, how are you, sis? How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Always good to talk with you.
And likewise, and I'm sorry it's been a minute, but so much, oh my gosh, so much is going on, I don't even know where to begin. And so when you asked me how was I doing, like, I'm all over the place. Like, it's crazy.
Well, that's right.
It's unbelievable. But it's a lot happening.
I got a chance to look at the clip that you sent when you did the presentation for city council. So I guess we could start there. We could just work our way through it. So you gave some words to city council, I believe, last week, as they are now looking to introduce a new police commissioner. Now, before you tell us about that, I just want to do a little quick sidebar. The first black woman police commissioner here for Philadelphia resigned. She just resigned. Her name was Commissioner Law, of all things, Law, what was her name? Law something. Anyway, I thought that was real ironic. But anyway, the whole time she was here, Sister Tawanda was kind of interesting and kind of crazy, which I'll go into it another time. But she just resigned. They were going to really drop it on her anyway, because a new mayor is going to come in, so they were going to get rid of her. So the new mayor will be elected for Philadelphia come November. So the mayor always selects the police commissioner. So she was on her way out anyway. But the point is, they were going to drop a lot of stuff on her, because for those that do not know, the murder rate in Philly is like crazy now. And they were trying to say that she incompetent, right, because of how the murder rate has increased, right? So she was like, look, I'm out of here. Because they was really going to say, cite it as if she was just not doing her job and all of that. And I just want to go on record. I'm going to open the floor for you, my sister. I just want to go on record to say that Negroes in Philly are pathetic. And that puts it at best. And this is not in defense of the sister who's leaving. This is a reality, meaning in our communities, as in most communities, Sister Tawanda, there are very few black stores. So in other words, in all of our communities, you got these poppy stores or the Chinese stores or somebody else. In all of our communities throughout the city, right? Now, most of the organizations in our community, they don't ask no questions. They don't ask, well, how do you think these guns getting into our community? They don't even bother asking those questions. Right? But yet, all these stores be popping up in our community, well-stocked, and they think that these people just are there, to just take our money. Well, they are there for that, needless to say. But what we've noticed is that most of those so-called poppy stores, if you look on the top of the building, because they usually have the whole building, so the downstairs is usually a store. The upstairs is usually boarded up, Like if you look on the outside of the store, the windows and stuff, you can't see inside of those. It's boarded up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm like, why is it like 90% of these stores are like that? What's up with that?
Right.
You see? So I just wanted to just bring that to folks' attention that we got everybody in our community doing business, but there's very few black businesses in our actual communities where we live, right? And so at some point, go into what you're getting ready to share with us. At some point, we got to ask about these politricksters. How come we ain't got no black businesses in our community for the most part? So anyway, that's my commentary on that. So tell us about what's going on with this new police commissioner that they're getting ready to bring into Baltimore. Tell us a little bit about that.
I sure will. And pretty much I'm glad you identified what was going on with y'all commissioner. And it's sort of almost like the same thing because we had you know, our commissioner, they pretty much brought in from out of town and said he was going to bring our murder rate down, this, that, and the third, Commissioner Harrison. And he pretty much resigned, like, and left us kind of pretty much hanging, you know. And so with him doing that, he called his predecessor and said, well, you know what, I want y'all to pull in Woolley. And who does that? Like, first of all, you failed us. You just walked away from the table. So at this point, to me, it's none of your business who they call in. But see, the thing was he had got paid all his money before he even came to Baltimore. They had already paid him his full salary or whatever. And he pretty much had all his money in the pocket, and he just pretty much walked away, turned his back, walked away. But my problem with the person, Woolley, that they're trying to, you know, put in office, that they're pretty much, like, we had all the bootlickers there and everybody, like, excuse my French, but we had the old mayor come from out of retirement, Jack Young, just to say, oh, we want him back. He knows to speak. It was a puppet show in there. Like, it was a whole puppet show. But, of course, you know, I stood my ground, and it's just crazy. But to make a long story short, so what's going on, before we even had the confirmation hearing, that's what I sent you, the confirmation hearing was this. But before that, they were trying to even offer the intern, Woolley, money to say even if he don't get confirmed or not, he still could walk away with, like, almost $200,000 or more. Like, what? Like, where they do that at? So they wind up, so the council people wind up saying, no, let's just wait till he get confirmed or whatever. But so it went through the first hearing. But the reason, my biggest problem with Woolley, let me give you the history on this piece of human trash. Now, mind you, he's been there, like, in the police department well over 20 years almost. So literally, like, but when he came to the Northeast Police District, which played a major role, that's where, like, at least about 15 of those killers that murdered my brother came from. But he was there, you know, back then. When my brother was murdered, he did not. He was a commander, and he always said, and then the crazy part, so each town hall meeting they was given week after week. So, you know, we bag boots on the ground outside for West Wednesday. So in between West Wednesday and going chasing him around the town to these town hall meetings that, you know, he's been presenting him in the mayor, because the mayor pretty much, you know, put him up and said, well, we're going to pass the power over, transition the power over to him or whatever. And we just was calling him out. So I said, well, let me give him the benefit of the doubt. Let me see. You know, I had this all wrong. Maybe he might be the man for the job. But I just reminded him, like, you know, you were there when my brother, you know, was murdered. And then also, I don't know if – so I got so much updating to tell you about Baltimore. So I don't know if you heard about the – well, you did, because I think the last time I came doing, I was telling you guys about the Brooklyn Homes you know, massacre, pretty much.
Right.
The last shooting where 30 people were shot and two, unfortunately, were murdered. A beautiful young queen and king were murdered.
And right. But the whole thing, so every time we presented all this information to Mr. Worley, he just had these already prepared answers and just lies. And, like, and he wouldn't be, he was the first one to say, oh, you know, I'm so sorry for what happened to your brother. And, you know, that was just awful. But, you know, I can't get into your brother's case because right now, you know, they're trying to do a second investigation into your brother's murder. And I don't want to be biased, he said, but I just want to let you know, like, if it gets passed down to me, we'll do whatever we have to do to make sure and reassure that, you know, justice get done type of thing. That's what he's saying in one breath. But then in the right. other breath, he's saying that even through the investigation back then, he always keep on, like, popping up the FOP. The FOP, you know, does a great job at, you know, investigating these type of things, and they came back on their findings, and they didn't find, they found that the officers act within reason, foolishness. So it's just a lie. But the simple fact that he, for one, he's not even a resident here, but he's been in Baltimore for so long. First of all, he's supposed to be a resident here, but he's not a resident here, but he's supposed to be one, but he's been in Baltimore so long. So everybody knows that when that massacre happened at in Brooklyn Homes, this is something that they've been doing since over decades. They have this big cookout every single year, same date, same time, just the same way as we celebrate Dr. King's Day, there's Brooklyn Day. But for him to set up in front of everybody at these town hall meetings and say, oh, well, you know, my officers wasn't aware of Brooklyn. They're like, are you kidding me? And then we heard the calls, sis. When I say so many people were calling and they didn't have one police car out there, but every week at West Ramsey, we get five or six. And I remind them, where were you guys at when that massacre was occurring? All we need was one of y'all the same amount, then that shooting wouldn't occur. So get out my face. Like, it's ridiculous. And then he even said, so this I think what boiled my skin. He said, you know what? I said, well, you know, you were the leading commander of the district. I said, so I got the depots, and it has your name on it that you were at the scene where my brother was murdered. Oh, yeah, he said, well, I don't remember if I came to the scene, you know, within an hour or minutes after your brother was murdered, but, yeah, I definitely did come. And I was like, wow. So I waited till the next town hall meeting because they had you, like, on these little two-minute timers and all this foolishness. So the last one that I went to before the confirmation, I asked him, I said, so what was that scene like when you went there? And he was like, oh, my God, that scene was so horrific, and I'm so sorry, and all this foolishness. But then in the same breath, sis, he's saying he never saw a bad cop. And he's saying he's such a good cop that no cop, this is what this man had the nerve to say, I'm such a good cop that no cop is going to ever do bad by me. But you went to the scene where my brother was slaughtered by 17 killer cops, okay? And you saw it, and you're like, he contradicted himself. And then it was so funny that we dropped one of his bones he had hidden in his closet. We dropped one of those bones at the meeting. One of my West Coalition members asked him, so Worley, tell us about the peace order that your wife got on you, and tell us about the abuse that you were abusing her. And he couldn't say no. When I say he was shaking in his boots, like, it was so funny. He was, when I say nothing but red, he was completely flustered, red. And then when they confronted him, the crazy part, you have these, so they had like maybe five of the council people there, and they all, it was so idiotic. They all like, well, we know that there's a distrust between the community and the people, and we know about Brooklyn Home, and we know about this, but we still going to give you a chance. We just going to lick your boots. We still going to give you a chance. So I confirmed, yes, so they wind up confirming them. Now on October the 2nd, it goes in front of the whole entire you know, board or whatever, board members. But okay. I'm just like, this is a laughing joke.
So, you know, this goes to why it's so important that we have our own. And we're going to be talking more about this in the very near future, but this is why right now for us as Rwanda to develop our own everything is so important. our own everything, our own schools, our own cultural institutions, our own financial institutions. This has got to be
Absolutely.
A part of, you know, and I'm not saying abandon or don't do the work that needs to be done in our present communities. I'm just saying simultaneously, we all do more than one thing, you know, in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
mm-hmm.
just saying to folks, that we have got to focus on having our own at some point, at least get
mm-hmm.
it ready for the next generation, if nothing else. Because these people ain't going to change. They ain't going to change. They're going to keep the same thing over and over. And then we going to still,
mm-hmm.
you know, try to combat them in the same
mm-hmm.
kind of way. And it just ain't making no sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not making
and
no
I
sense.
Wanted to,
oh, by the way, since well, I just remember what the outgoing commissioner's name, this is kind of ironic. Her last name is Outlaw.
And she's out of a job. That's funny. Outlaw. Okay.
Outlaw. That's a nice name. Outlaw.
Wow.
Anyway.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. That is funny. You can't make it right. Hollywood can't make this stuff up, but it is. It's hilarious, but what I wanted to point out to you and your listening audience that we live in, you know, a city that's predominantly, you know, ran by, like, Democrats and, you know, things of that nature. But for our mayor to actually be putting in Caucasian people and, you know, a black city, it's like it speaks in volumes. Like, because the last fire chief that was there for over 20 years or more, he's pretty much gone, and the white man's replacing him. And then now for you to have a black commissioner that just walked away from the job to have this other white Caucasian face, I'm just, like, over it. Like, okay. I wouldn't be surprised if they get a white chick to replace Mayor Brandon Scott. And I'm just, like, it's just, like, it's to the point you have to laugh from crying, like, to be honest. Like, it's just sad. But it's just, like, ridiculous, the stuff that is going on right in front of our eyes and face. And then it was so sad because the beautiful mother of Aaliyah, who was pretty much murdered, her mother came and, like to the town hall meetings and tore him a new butthole, and he couldn't even look at her. And then I think at the last one, it was sometimes it wasn't even a town hall because we went to all the town halls, but he met with her some type of way somewhere else. I don't know where it was. I could see. So what they would do is they would have these public meetings where everybody could come, but then they also would have, like, private meetings where they only invite a few people and all this foolishness. So when he had
right.
a private meeting, he invited her, and then I heard they were talking. I'm in my mind, like, I wouldn't let that piece of trash touch me because they're all in it together because they were all the ones, for real, that, like, told, like, you can hear. And then all they're doing is, like, they're not firing nobody. They're just redistricting them, putting them here and putting them there instead of putting them in a damn jail cell for corruption to the highest, but they'd rather just place them at different districts. Like, you had a commander in charge to say, don't y'all get involved in that stuff. Pretty much just let them kill each other. Y'all don't go get caught up in that stuff. You got that. You hear them on tape. And all they did was just move them over to another. I'm just like, this stuff is just really interesting. And it reminds me of the levels of corruption when my brother was murdered because in his case, they had 183 pages where all this foolishness that they admitted to doing, everything wrong with murdering my brother. And then they investigation now with the massacre, they got like over 183 pages right now saying all the stuff that they did wrong, but they ain't doing nothing to correct it. They're doing nothing to correct it. It's sad and ridiculous.
Yeah, well, again, Sister Tawana, that's what we have to continue to point out. They're not going to do anything beyond a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
In every major city now, there are millions of dollars that have been allocated for anti-violence
mm-hmm.
and particularly gun violence
mm-hmm.
and all that. We're talking about millions of dollars just allocated
mm-hmm.
just for that gun, so-called gun stuff,
mm-hmm.
and yet everything has increased. So this is a game that's being
mm-hmm.
played. And so, you know, the thing is, at some point we have to begin to remove ourselves from the direct targeting of some of this craziness. You see, we've got to find our own safe havens, our own sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. We've got to create and develop that, just like other people do.
Yep.
You're not going in the Jewish community and do nothing beyond a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, it's just not going to happen, right? So we have to establish certain things in, within our parameters that is safety zones or whatever, and guard it as such. That's what I'm saying. Guard it as such. But those who want to be a part of that, that's not for everybody. We get that. But for those who are now ready to secure some things for ourselves, for our children, then so be it, you see. And so, again, as we talk more about reparatory justice, that's got to be a part of it, to make certain that we can create and develop our own villages, our own society, whatever we're going to call them, our own boroughs, whatever. That's what we have to now have, just like other people did. You know, here in Pennsylvania, they got something called Levittown. Levittown in Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. It's not far from Philly. But the word Levit comes from the Hebrew Levite. And that's what lived in that community, primarily the Jewish people. It's called Levittown, but it's Levite. And they pretty much dominate that area. You see, you got the same thing with Quakertown. So I'm saying, I ain't saying nothing that's foreign or different, because other people are doing it. Right?
Absolutely.
So, so we've got to look at doing these things, and particularly in the context of reparatory justice. Reparations is now being discussed very widely, and people are making headway. I'm just saying we got to up the ante, raise the bar, and rather than dealing with these people in their way, we got to now move into a way of our own resolution. So just wanted to put that out there. But tell us what's been going on with West Wednesday.
Yeah, so West Wednesday, we're pretty much, we just completed 530 weeks. Like I said, we're back, boots on the ground. And I even had, like, one of my sisters that come up from D.C., who her brother was pretty much murdered. Like, he pretty much... I believe his name was James Green, but he pretty much was, you know, just had a car accident, called law enforcement officers, you know, to the scene, and they wind up killing him while he had handcuffs, shot him up. I'm just like, they just executing us. I mean, executing us. And now, like, they're in court. They started the hearing a procedure, but immediately because, and this is the first time I ever saw it, because I guess they let the history of the killers kind of, you know, speak for itself, because this officer had killed before, and immediately after this happened, and when the sister, well, she's the cousin, she's not the sister, but she's the cousin, and when she started turning up, they immediately arrested the officer. So the officer is locked up, and, you know, but they just kind of prolong and stuff, and but it's just awful. Like I said, this is sad, like, and every week we continue on reading, you know, the national police brutality list, and it's just sad. Like, now that I'm noticing every time I read it or we read it, you're now hearing about it. It literally went from, like, maybe one or two people, you know, but now we're, like, hearing about family. Like, we'll hear family members' names. You know, we don't get all of the information, detailed information about the murders. All we know is that they were murdered. But we're hearing, like, a wife and a husband at the age of, like, one we read, I think it was the week before last, it was a couple, an elderly couple murdered, and I think it was somewhere, somewhere, I forgot where it was, but it's like you live to be in your 80s and you're an elderly couple and you pulled over for a traffic stop and the husband and the wife die? get murdered, not mm-hmm. die, but get murdered, assassinated. But that's what wow. they're doing us, because at the end of the day, they know nothing is going to happen. Nothing is going to happen. They kill who they want to kill, and it is us. And then they let whoever they want around. Like, white people get to do whatever they want to do. They can shoot at the police. They can go on for days trying to capture them, but they will not murder them whatsoever. But we, as soon as we pull out our driver's license, we're gunned down. So it is what it is. So, but and then I meant to tell you in the process of West Wednesday, I didn't tell you since how they got. That's why I said I've been going through so much, because immediately when we went to the last town hall meeting, somebody tried to stop me from going because they slipped my tire. They stabbed my tire. And then at the same time they stabbed my tire, they stabbed the guy who hosts my West Wednesday, who put it up. They got his tire 2 weeks in a row. They got his tire then at the town hall meeting, and they got his tire the week after. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then it was interesting because we were on Greenmount and 33rd, sister. Get this. We're on Greenmount 33rd. My camera guy, he can't make it to West Wednesday because now for the second time in a week, somebody done stabbed his tire. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then while we on West Wednesday, I'm being really alert and visual because I'm in my gut feeling like something's going to pop off. We're on Greenmount 33rd, you know. You get to feel the energy, and they always send somebody inebriated to walk past and talk trash. So they had this inebriated lady to walk past and talk a little trash, like whatever. But I'm like, okay. And long story short, we seen like a whole foot chase. And I don't know who they were chasing, but they had guns drawn. They jumped out of so many unmarked cars, cars that you wouldn't even suspect. Like, they jumped out of this, like, oh, my goodness. Like, I want to say, what kind of, like, a little escort car? You're like, what in the world? Like, they were jumping out of all, like, vans, trucks, and they were all, like, parked around the whole, like, 33rd and Greenmount gas station, and they all running out with their little vests on, guns drawn, running up Greenmount 33rd. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But it was interesting that, like I said, if my camera guy was there, none of this foolishness wouldn't have happened. You get what I'm saying? Because he would have right. and got, like, the details and showed it on, you know, live and all that stuff. But I'm like, oh, yeah, this is really interesting. But, yeah, they doing the most right now. Like, yes, it's sad. But and then, we got all these Negro peens out here. They ain't doing nothing but supporting our own. Us getting murdered. And then I want to let you know too, since I don't know how they going at y'all juveniles over there, but they coming real strong and real hard at the juveniles here in the city. They the new thugs, the new Negroes. They the ones that they want, like, their blood, and they trying to, like, because we had our Senator Jill Carter, shout out to her, that always fight for our babies in Annapolis, and she had so many bills this upcoming year, at the beginning of the year, I'm sorry, she passed so many bills to, like, kind of protect our babies, saying, like, they couldn't get questioned without their parents being around, which makes sense. They're babies, you know? But but meanwhile, you got the Officer Bill of Rights that covers these killer cops, and they can't get questioned unless they're attorney. These are grown men and women accused of murder and brutality. They can't even get questioned, but yet they're trying to block this bill and, like, tear her apart because Jill sponsored such a bill. They trying to, like, they going at a full force, like, and everything is carjackers now. It was to the point, sis, at the last town hall meeting, you remember those big old bars that you used to put on your car with the locks that everybody right. was using? They were giving them away at the last town hall meeting. Like, you had a whole line of cars, like, going, I'm talking about 15 blocks back. I'm like, what they was all waiting to get their little bar locked for key thing for free. I'm just like, okay. All they doing is, like, going, just the wheel is just going backwards. Like, it's just going right back to in the 2000, everybody was locking their cars up with the little bar locks. I'm just like, oh, we're like, this stuff is a joke. Then they claimed that we don't have no more jump out boys, but I witnessed at least about 10 jump out boys and cars that we wouldn't even suspect being jump out boy cars. I'm like, you can't then for our state's attorney to come up there and back up Worley when he know about the Gun Trace Task Force. Like, he turned in, like, one of the officers. You get what I'm saying? Not turned him in, but he pretty much was talking about, you know, Jenkins, the major player that was in there. And you just say, Worley can handle our district, and they all got. And then, oh, this is the part that really made me mad, and I talked about this too, but of course they didn't show it. Meanwhile, the meeting started at 5 o'clock. They claimed mm-hmm. that they wasn't going to let nobody in until like 4:30. We were out there since like 3:30. Standing. Do you know they let all of the white shirts, all of the bootlickers go fill a room up and would not let us up? And I'm like, hold up, like y'all let Lottie, Dottie, and everybody up. We've been standing literally at the door watching them walk past Jack Young coming, waving at us. I'm like, how do you get to go up and we don't? Then we get up there, we look, and Shorty was with me, and Shorty looked on the book. They had the whole page, like, signed up. Shorty, like, did a roll call, like, oh, is State's Attorney Ivan Bates here yet? Oh, he not here. I'm about to scratch his name. I'm like, he went down the whole list. Like, but I made sure I mentioned that in front of when all the media was rolling. I'm like, you know, it's sad that we are the last one to come in the room, but we're the first one to go to jail or go 6 feet in the dirt first. We're the first ones to do that. But we last to come into y'all little bourgeois meetings. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, the stuff, sis, I'm telling you, it's real. It's real.
Wow. Well, you know, mm-hmm. sis, again, very soon we're going to be coming back to be more to introduce what we call the Black Print. Actually, it's called now the Ultra Black Print Agenda 25. And it is, you know, an introduction to our people who are interested with some, you know, plans of action, at least possibilities of what we need to do. So we're going to be introducing what we call our Blacknificent Cities. And Bemore is one of our cities that we're coming to. We're going to introduce it here in Philly next week because, again, if other people can have their own town, city, borough, whatever, mm-hmm. why can't we?
Mm-hmm.
You see, at least to look at it, at least to talk more about it, at least to examine it. We talk about Black Wall Street. Well, okay,
Amen.
They showed us what can be done. What are we talking
mm-hmm.
about doing now, you see?
Right.
And so now we're
right.
going to introduce these concepts into our cities and, if nothing else, have the conversation of us having our own school, our own banks,
mm-hmm.
or credit union, our own
yep.
cultural centers, our own health facilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we get
mm-hmm.
ready to bring in with the Million Woman World March and our Ultra Black Print Agenda 25. We got to be talking about something a little different now, you know. Absolutely. And also for the brothers, there's a brother unit coming for MWM that's going to be dealing with what we call the Empress's Guards. That's right.
Mm.
The Empress's Guards. For black men
nice.
Who be talking, we're going to see now what you're talking about doing in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We've waited long
mm-hmm.
enough. There are some brothers who have
mm-hmm.
been ready but couldn't really find the hookups, you know, in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
That with other brothers, I mean, they're out there, but it wasn't organized, you see. So
mm-hmm.
now mama's coming to help do some of that too, right? To get these brothers
mm-hmm.
on the right track and get them moving together to better protect our communities and our families. And lastly, with that, Sister Tawanda,
mm-hmm.
for Philly, in the past month, we have at least 5 missing black women and girls in the past month.
But we got more than that. We got more than that, sis. Like I said, that little ticker is back at the bottom of the screen because they don't even respect our black women enough to even show their face. But at the bottom of the screen, they'll say, you know, this young lady or this woman, you know, that's 5'3", da 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 da, you know, is missing, and you never hear about, like, it's getting bad. And I'm glad you mentioned missing. because recently my nephew, which is Tyrone West's youngest son, wound up missing. And what had happened was he had wound up, and he suffers from severe depression after his father was murdered back in 2013, because he always goes back to that night when my brother called him, and I was the bare witness of that. And my brother asked him, was he going to come and stay the night with him that night? And, you know, he was tired because he was, like, really into, like, his basketball sports and things like that. And it was in the summertime, you know. And he's like, well, Dad, we'll hook up. He was 16 at the time. He's like, Dad, we'll hook up tomorrow type of thing. And, you know, the tomorrow never happened because my brother was murdered. Yeah. So he suffered from that type of trauma of saying, oh, my goodness, what if I would have just said, Dad, you could come pick me up? Then my dad wouldn't have been picking this young lady up that he barely knew. He'd have been with me. And I even used to, I thank God I'm adult enough to understand that it wasn't my fault for lending my vehicle out that pretty much my brother was targeted and ultimately murdered. But I suffer from that blame game, like, what if I would have just told him no, he couldn't go get this young lady? So, but to have my nephew be traumatized from that and then wind up, you know, being like partially schizophrenic and to suffer from all this mental anguish that came along with losing his dad. But he had pretty much, like, with, I guess, with everything, with me trying to get everything open, investigate, that he's going through his own stuff, that he was living in South Carolina, and then his grandmother pretty much moved out and left from there, because normally she would be the one to make sure he takes his medicine every day. So when she left from there to his own defense, he pretty much stopped taking his meds. And then, you know, he called me and said, hey, auntie, you know, can you send me a couple dollars, you know, cash at me? My phone about to be turned off. That way I can get some food or whatever until I get my paycheck this week. I said, all right, baby. I didn't know he was going to fill his gas and just say, you know what, since I got to move from out my house in South Carolina, I'm just going to start over in Atlanta. And that was the whole plan. And to make a long story short, he wound up breaking down on the intersection when he first got into Atlanta, and that's what started everything. The whole nightmare started then. And now I can relate to when you hear about somebody being missing or just homeless people. I can relate to all these things because pretty much when he had walked to go get gas for his car, he wound up getting robbed. He got his ID and everything took from him. We sent the money to, you know, come back home or whatever. Everything was taken from him, and then we had his cell phone, everything, like, literally was gone. And I didn't hear from him for days, and I'm like, days turned into weeks, and it just was sad. And the crisis team down there is a joke and everything, because, like, he would pretty much every now and then, like, use somebody's phone and call me and say, because I put out, like, a missing report and everything, and then we kind of, like, put him on the Missing Atlanta, Georgia page and all that stuff, saying what he last was wearing. And then when he had called me, like on a West Wednesday, he had called me and said that he was, you know, needed some food and that he was going through and study walking around, and then, like, he would get to different hospitals and then leave because he was in fear of the police. Make a long story short, I just recently found out because they were sort of been looking for him some more because I didn't hear from him in, like, another week or two. And then, get this, is me having this power of attorney, dual power of attorney. I was trying to get his vehicle that they told, because when we found out he first was missing and we put out the report and we gave them the VIN number, they were able to find out his car had got towed when he was, you know, walking to the gas station, they called it. But the interesting part, the police told it to a police pal as if, like, he committed a crime. And their rules are different than, like, the city typical rules. It's like the impound from the city come and tow your car. But in long story short, I got the dual power of attorney. And when I tried to get his vehicle and pay for it, they're like, oh, no, you can't get it. He has to be the one. I'm like, he's missing right now. I want to at least come down there. I said, I'm in a whole nother state. I want to stop these things. I said, I know what y'all are trying to do. You're trying to auction off his new Mercedes-Benz. You're not going to do that. I have dual power of attorney. And in that, it gives specifics of, you know, I have power over his accounts, his assets, his tangible items. That's his car. Like, and they're like, oh, this power attorney is no good. And they said, like, as of the day, like, his vehicle's almost $900 because they keep adding on $50 a day, and they won't let me get in. And I found out on my own because they couldn't tell me anything that, thank God he called me. He got locked up for disorderly conduct because he kept on trying to find out which car pound his car was at, and he got into an argument with, like, this Mercedes person because he went to the wrong place instead of the pound, and that's due to the mental illness. But when he went to the Mercedes-Benz dealership, like, hey, you guys got my car, they called the police on him, and they locked him up. So now he has a court date coming up on October the 4th, so I'm going to have to ride down there myself, and I'm trying to scrape up money and all I can to get him because I got to get the vehicle that's almost $800 now. So by the time we get down there, I know it's going to be almost like $1,000 plus, you get what I'm saying? And then I got to get down there to get him. It's just a lot going on, so that's why you haven't heard from me. But I just, like, I got the best sleep ever when I heard his voice, and he called me last West Wind and said, hey, auntie, and it was from the jail. And I'm like, even though that's not a good place, but I just thank God he was okay because he wound up sleeping outside, you know, walking around. I couldn't get the crisis center to cooperate. And then when we got the crisis center to come, I told them, please don't let the police come because they called me like 2 weekends ago from a Domino's pizza. So I ordered them food over the phone, paid with my credit card, told them that, you know, hold them there. And the guy was the sweetest thing ever because he was like, okay, I got you. And he held, and they took 2.5 hours, the crisis center took 2.5 hours to come there. And when they came, well, we told them, even the guy, the owner of the Domino's pizza said, look, please do not let 12, the police, those pigs come to my shop. This is a nice young man. He need medical treatment. We don't want no pigs here. That's what he told him. And they sent five police cars, and my nephew took off running. And then I didn't hear from him until this West Wednesday that passed. And when I heard the voice that he was at least in jail and not on the streets, and thank God he ended the crazy part. When I called the police department down, they're like, well, until he hurts himself or hurts someone, it's nothing that we could do. We got a lot of people walking around not in their right mental state. We even have some people talking to themselves, but that's okay, long as they ain't hurt nobody. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Y'all joke. If 911's a joke, the crisis center's a joke, the police, everybody's a joke right now. They don't care about all Mr. Black women, men, teenagers, anything. It's sad. It's sick, man. So, but that's the reality in which I'm dealing with right now. They wouldn't even help them. They could have got them killed. And, you know, they didn't care. And then again, now that I even told the pound he's incarcerated, they still won't stop the fees on the car, and they still won't let me get his vehicle. And that makes no sense when I got dual power of attorney, like from the courthouse, like, been headed. I've been headed in my hand since 2019, you know, so it's just like everything is a joke. So it's so sad we live in a world, it doesn't even matter if you are right, it's what you can prove. And it isn't even what you can prove, it's just a capitalist system that don't give a damn about us, and they're going to do what they got to do. That's why we got to do what we need to do. And that's like you said, built our own schools, our own police departments, everything. We got to do all that. So I'm with that 100%. And I love you, sis, for always keeping that torch alive and for helping our people uncut. Like, you don't know, and it's sad, like, people don't say stuff about people until they did and gone, and then they want to, oh, Sister Empress was this, and she, I'm going to give you your flowers while you're right here on earth. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give them to you now because we don't have nobody that's really trying to help us and be there, you know, and I just really appreciate you and all the powerful, wonderful stuff you're doing. Like, you are the modern day Harriet Tubman. And it's just like I said, if Harriet Tubman was still living, she probably had half of these Negroes, man. So I'm just saying. So I'm just saying.
No, that's right. All right, my sister. Well, I thank you as usual.
Thank you.
You know, again, you know, anytime you want to come on, just let me know. And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon. We're getting ready to kick off Million Woman March week next week. And we'll be doing things a whole month. We got a lot of things we're getting ready to bring forward. We've waited long enough. We're not waiting any longer. We're going to get this stuff done. So much love to you and your family.
And let me know. Thank you. Let me know whenever you come back up and be more, because you know we definitely going to sit down, talk, go to lunch, and just figure out the stuff. And one last thing before I go, I want everybody to keep an eye on how COVID is now coming back, which it never left, but it's now, but it's coming back with a vengeance, because people that never, ever had it before are getting it, like my daughter. And that was another thing I was dealing with. My baby, my youngest daughter, she never had COVID during the whole pandemic time, and she just got over COVID. Like I had, she just got over it. She just caught it and everything. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then the crazy part, the government will have us believe, oh, you know, if you get vaccinated and you get the booster and you get this, it's going to help you fight it. And man, they ain't doing nothing. Y'all getting sick the same way. I done had COVID four times, and the same amount of sickness that I get, y'all getting the same thing. So it's just like, be careful what they putting in our body. And I just want to say on this last note, so many people, young people now, are going in the hospital and they not coming home. I done been to so many people's funerals, and it's like, what's up? Like, they keep dying in their sleep or dying at the hospital, going in a cardiac arrest. Everybody's going in a cardiac arrest. So keep an eye out on that. Keep an eye out on that, everybody. They wiping us out, I'm telling you. I done went to three friends' funerals, 45 years of age or younger, cardiac arrest, died in a hospital, or just got released and straight died. So watch that. That's why if I get sick, you couldn't pay me to go to the hospital. I'm a heal my whole self up. Like, it's just crazy. It's got what? Just keep an eye out on that, because there's a lot. I'm telling you, it's a lot more. I just lost a cousin of mine. They went near his house, found him dead. Like, what? And all they keep saying, cardiac arrest. Watch it.
Was this all
what
in Baltimore?
In the what they doing?
All
in Baltimore, yes. All in Baltimore. All in Baltimore. So just make sure you keep an eye out on that. If people start dropping, find out, inquire, and say, what did they die from? It's a lot of cardiac arrest stuff happening in B-more actively now. I'm talking about massively. Massively
well,
in young
so you-
people. So, yeah.
Just so that you know, sister, one of the things when we come to Be More, we're going to be doing a conference. The first one is going to be dealing with Black women's health and remembering, of course, Henrietta Lacks. So we're going to be doing like a Henrietta Lacks weekend to remind people, you know, that we got to be careful about these hospitals. So I'm going to be telling you more about that because that's one of the things we'll be coming to Baltimore to do. Because we got a lot coming up for 2024. But my sister, much love to you. I thank you always. And you know, listen, let's do this. All right, my sister, give thanks.
All right, talk to you later. Give thanks.
Peace to you. Yes. All right, family, that, of course, was our sister Tawanda Jones. Of course, that's our Be More report for this evening. And, of course, it's been a while since we've talked with her because, as you have heard, you know, she's been dealing with a lot of things with her family issues, but she's been keeping that West Wednesday going, you know, in remembrance of her brother who was murdered there in Baltimore in 2013. And we stay connected with her because she continues to not only fight for justice for her brother, but she fights for justice for the people there in Baltimore and in other cities when it comes to police and governmental terrorism and other things related to social justice. So she is one of our, she doesn't know it yet, but we get ready to declare her one of our official ambassadors for the Million Woman World March. We'll be telling you more about some of our ambassadors next week. Of course, Sister Sheila Brown is one of our ambassadors, and we get ready to appoint some brothers too, y'all. That's right. When we bring this movement forward now, it is about nation building. And guess what? We like being the first of things, so this is going to be the first nations developed by sisters. How y'all like that? Anyway, let's get ready to go to our next segment. And again, in talking about nation building, first, of course, we're talking about village, society. Those are two of the primary or other maybe kind of prerequisites to what we're talking about down the road. We're looking at now the development of independent society, self-determined oriented, as well as, of course, what we also refer to as villages. That's what we're talking about right now, family. And we're going to give you all the opportunity to join us in for this conversation as we now get ready to talk with a brother who I said to you earlier, he's new to our New Day platform and family, but certainly you will be hearing more from him as we proceed, because again, it's about building with our families, building with our communities, building with our people as a whole globally. So let's do this, family. Let's bring in our brother Asifa Bey is in the house, calling in from Florida. And again, we're going to start talking more about what we need to do with land, what we need to do to develop our own independent societies, and, of course, villages. We can do that right now, y'all. That ain't going to take a whole lot. So let's open up his mic, and let's welcome our brother. Again, his name is Asifa Bey. Hey, brother, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, sister. How you doing? I'm so refreshing to hear. Brothers and sisters continuing the movement, keeping it going strong, and you know, keeping their head focused under such you know, oppressive things that are going on across this country. I'm honored to be on your podcast, sister, just to let you know.
No, that's right. Well, we thank you for joining us, my brother. And you know, in reality, you know, it is the continuation of our ancestors that we bring forward this work. Again, when I first began to interact with you a few days ago, I already knew. You know, and this is how it's starting to manifest with some of us. We might just, you know, become familiar with one another in this particular time, but there is a kindred spirit that we're now finding with one another. Just like the sister that was just on, I met her a few years ago when I went to Baltimore. Minister Farrakhan was doing something at Morgan State, and I was invited, and I met Sister Tawanda. And right away, it was like we just, I don't know, it was something that happened. And I'm just saying that to say that we're now starting to connect with genuine people. I mean, we're different in many ways because a lot of people I'm connected to, we are very different. But there's one thing that we're very clear about, and that is who and what the enemy is and what we now got to do about it. So, again, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us, for, you know, allowing us to interact and to continue this process of growth and development.
I say, I appreciate that. Foremost, I would like to say thank you to all the listeners, too. I definitely appreciate being on your platform. And I want to say this, this journey has been a long one. You know what I mean? I grew up remembering a sense of community that we had, you know, when I was younger, back in the early mid-60s, early 70s, you know, everybody knew each other. Families were respectful of each other. And it was a strong cohesiveness. But it was more so segregated. And that was our base. That was our power base.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand when we were segregated, we have more sense of community than we are integrated.
Right.
And even though we didn't have as much equality at the time, and we were fighting for equality and social justice, et cetera, we had a more sense of a rounded community that had his own teachers, his own business owners, you know,
yep.
his own police force, his own, you know. So, you know, me growing up in that era and understanding true essence of what real family used to be, it's a sad situation now to see it now. Our melanated family is decaying.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't subscribe too much to the word black because of the lawful status of it, but I use melanated a lot because we are carbonated melanated beings. And I believe that we're accomplished a lot, but we're still hitting another milestone. This coming up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you said what you said about, you know, you rather use the terminology of melanated. And see, this is what I'm saying, that we are, you know, we are a vast people, and we have different approaches, philosophy, ideas, and it's all good. We don't all need to prescribe to the same whatever in certain things. For example, with me, I do use the word black because I deal with physics. I don't deal with what this man say is law and all that. I don't give them that because their law is not my law. So I don't, you know, prescribe to what they call various things. But again, I think it's important that we understand that our people, we can call ourselves whatever we want to, whatever we want to. You know, and so I appreciate you saying that. I always tell brothers and sisters, though, when you say melanated, that includes everybody, because everybody's got
right,
melanin.
Right, exactly.
But
right,
that doesn't
exactly.
identify anybody, as far as I'm concerned, because everyone
right.
has melanin. So that means we're talking about white folks, too.
Right, right. And they, you know, well, they come from us, of course.
Right. But I'm just saying, see, I use that. I say something very specific because white folks ain't going to say they black. So I'm very specific because I
know. They starting to take the DNA tests and stuff like that to prove that they have what they call the melanin gene. You know.
Yeah, I know. But,
you know.
Yeah.
So,
no, that doesn't.
I want to say this. In all due respect, I love the dialogue that we had that I was listening to.
Yes. Yes.
With Wanda, my heart goes out to her and her family. You know, when we don't have control over certain things, in a particular our environment, and things starting to run wild and loose. We gave up our powers to other people because we became dependent upon. And that's what we're dealing with our situation now.
Right.
A lot of our people.
But my brother, on that note, and you're absolutely, I totally agree. But the other part of that is when we say, see, We, meaning you, I, and others of similar mindsets, we are going to have to differentiate ourselves. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's becoming a little too ambiguous when we say we. Because, for example, years ago, I won't allow people to call me a leader. I stopped it. Because I don't want to be in the same category with these other people. So I don't let anyone, like, put me in, you know, and I understand what they mean, and I appreciate, you know, the idea and what they bestow upon me, but I choose to do self-determination, and so I say to folk, if you want to describe me in that manner, I would prefer if you use the word conductor as opposed to leader. Because I don't want to be in that same category with the charlatans and the rainbow people and all of that. I don't want that. So I make sure.
Right.
I'm real clear about what I do and say. So I ask people to call me a conductor. And now that's what, you know, people who are close to me, that's what, if they're having a conversation when you have to use certain words, they will say, my sister, the conductor. She's the conductor. And so what happened was I went through a whole process to develop that terminology. Because, again, I deal with physics. And anyone that understands what a conductor is in physics, then you understand the, you know, it's a similar concept as being a leader, but, you know, again, it's in a framework that I want people to identify with. So also in music, you have a conductor, you see?
Right.
And then what was Harriet Tubman called? He was called a conductor. That's right. See,
right.
So again, I think things through very carefully because when I want to be identified or recognized in a certain way, then it's really in this day and age, it's up to us. So my point is, and I'm going right back to you, we have to start differentiating about who the we is that we're talking about. Because the Negro Kings, I'm not a part of that we. It doesn't mean
right.
I won't.
Well, you know,
act.
I wanted to say this.
Go ahead.
when you're dealing with differentiating yourself, you know, or separating yourself from the Boule, because that's what we're dealing with. I'm dealing with the people who were Boule, which was actually really fraternal order. It became a popular term, and their fraternal order was the gatekeepers, and they were the protectors of the white supremacist structure, or the, you know, their state structure. So, you know, to be real with it, you want to be differentiated, you know, separated from that, you know, especially when you call yourself a conductor for the people.
That's right.
You know,
right.
But we the people,
I was just going to say, and I mean a little, even with we the people and now, because a lot of folks say we the people. So now to differentiate who I'm talking about, I say we the original people. See, that's like other people can't get in that.
I mean, of course, when you're dealing with the words, it's the semantics of it. But, you know, in terms, generally, when you're having general conversation, people who talk, that you talk with, typically know what you're talking about. But
white folks say all the time, we the people. And they think they talking about,
they only just now coined that phrase. That was our phrase.
Oh, no, brother, I beg
you. Let me correct you on it real quick. We the people were the indigenous Americans, the copper-tone colored people of the land.
Okay, but they called themselves
the
people?
So, yes, that's who created the first Confederacy, the first construct.
I got that part. Okay. Now, I got that part. Nope, I'm asking something very specific. The people that you're talking about, did they call themselves we the people?
Well, when they first organized themselves to be a society or organized themselves as the institution to become a state, yes, they did.
Oh, you got to send that to me because I studied pretty
diligently. I'll send you some information.
Okay.
Because
I'm being very specific. I'm not talking about some documents or drafts of documents. And note I said drafts of documents. I'm not talking about that in the wording. I'm talking about the people themselves. See, this is very important.
Well, the people themselves are their own state. You know what I'm saying? We are our own state. We are our own.
Right, but that's not what I'm asking. That's not what
body,
I'm asking.
You know?
I got that part. But from a phraseology standpoint, right, because, again, there's certain phrases that are utilized for very specific reasons. I got that. But when you say a group of people said this, they coined this phrase, as we the people, right? And again, we're talking about in English.
Let me say this. King George was a melanated man. You know that, right?
I've heard it, but I've never seen
King Arthur was a melanated man.
I've heard that too. And again, I've never seen any proof.
So even the language of Maori Latin comes from us. So,
and I'm saying
we can stop giving the Caucasian man so much power by giving them the honor of saying, oh, they invented this. No, they did not.
No, that's not what I'm saying, brother. What I am saying, though, because, again, I am very specific, and whatever I say, I can pretty much back it up with some form of documentation. So what I'm saying is this. Send me, if you would please, because I stand to be corrected. I ain't got a problem with that. It's always about growth and development. I've heard that King this and that was melanated and all that, and I'm like, yeah, okay, show it to me. I've yet to see any valid
Sister, I got more than enough proof that we have that information. I'll send it to you.
Okay, I await it. And here's the other thing. In talking about English, we know that there's at least three Old English, there's three different types. And so with that said, the deviation or the variant of that, and that, again, has to be distinguished. Because just like it says the King James Version of something, so, again, there's words that were changed in terms of its meaning. It didn't mean that at some point, but because somebody was in authority or capable of making it be that then it went with that. It became that. And we have to be very clear about these things.
And to this day, we speak the King's English
or
the English, you know, Maori Latin or Greek or Germanic. You know,
that's what I'm saying. When we say things like "we the people," I'm like, okay.
Listen to what I'm saying. When I'm talking about we, I'm talking about, and I'm gonna make a differentiation. When I say we, when I say melanated people, who are about the progressive, about self-determination and the progressiveness of their and the upliftment of who they are, their race. You know. A lot of people say the race, there's no such race, we're human beings. Well, you know, even people debate about that, you know.
Sure.
Some people say we're homo sapiens.
Right,
some people say, you know,
right.
And so when we're dealing with the semantic of the word, you know, I tried to speak to a listening artist that say, okay, you know, well, you know, I hear what the brother's saying. I understand what he conceptually is saying. You feel what I'm saying? Because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of listeners out here that are intellectuals.
And
they understand the English very well.
Right. Sure.
I wanted to say this. And this is all part of understanding how we build with each other and how we interact with each other, how we grow and understand the intricacies of relationship building. Because in order to have a village, a society, or any of a nation, there has to be an integral relationship.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You understand what I'm saying? And it got to be under a mutual consensus that we have those, you know, have these differences and then understand why we have these differences. Because you got to understand, our people have been plagued with the PTSD, post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Yeah, that's what Dr. George DeCurry called it, too.
You know, and then on top of that, they had all these different codes, the black codes, the Christian black codes.
Right.
You know, so all this conditioning that our people went through, you know, we had to build an intricate relationship with them because everybody's, you know, when you're building these type of societies, everybody's not going to be the business leader. Some people want to just be the janitor. Some people want to just be the farmer. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
So everybody has their role to play.
Absolutely.
So the intricate relationship that we have to have with each other is based on mutual understanding, mutual respect, and mutual benefit.
Which brings me to a point. So this is why, again, what we hear, and I'm glad you said that, because amongst us today, and I'm talking about those of us who, as you indicated, are striving for Kuji Chang Aliyah self-determination and other things relevant to that. For whatever reason, you know, there seems to be this thing of, well, if you're calling yourself that, then, you know, I'm not going to interact with you. Or, you know, da, 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 because that's a code and blah, 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 and all that. So I'm saying you're absolutely correct. Rather than allowing an entity to be self-determined, meaning name yourself the way you want to, and then not
right.
come under the scrutiny of what others think, you know, just because that's the way they see it or view it, you see. That don't mean that that's the way that somebody else view it or their reasoning or whatever. It's not the same. So I'm saying I totally agree. We have to take steps forward to begin to, you know, interact with one another with respect, with the capability of not trying to interfere in somebody else's concept of certain things. If, in fact, it's not hurting you, meaning that group, it's not trying to impede what they're doing, you see, or compete
right, exactly.
with what they're doing. You see what I'm saying? So with that said, yeah. family, it's my pleasure to announce that very soon you're going to hear us call for two meetings, and one of them is going to be dealing with the United Nations of Independent Peoples, Nations, et cetera. You
I
see?
Because
there you go. See, we figured some of this out now in such a way where we need to begin to come together with everyone in their own accord. Ain't nobody trying to tell nobody else what to do. We just want to identify what can we do together, things that we can do collectively together without stepping on anybody's toes, without getting in anybody's business beyond a certain point, but just focus on here's a couple of areas or issues that we agree on, and here's what we can do together about it. That's what
right, I say. I say.
There you go. There you go. See, we're going to do this. The Million Woman March Universal Movement is going to be the caller of such a coming together. You see, as
and
mothers,
rightfully so, it should.
There you go. There you go.
and I want to interject for a minute.
Go ahead.
You know, I remember when there was a call for Million Man March.
Mm-hmm.
The women were very supportive of it.
Absolutely.
And,
yep.
And I remember when they had the children's Million Children March with Mary Andrew Wright, Stanford Children.
I
remember that.
I don't know about that one.
Well, I mean, these were different movements that were spiraled off of that. You feel what I'm saying? It was all about. It was all about us having our own self-determination, you know, different
so
people
that,
having their own.
I'm sorry, but I got to ask this question because when certain things kind of trigger my brain. So the children's thing that you're talking about, that was about us? All us? That didn't include
Well, I mean,
us
it was, people? Well, it was, listen to what I'm saying. We were organizing at the time. It was Young People in Action, Youth Leadership Training and Development, and our motto was Paving the Road for Black Youth Excellence.
Okay, but that's not my question.
When I'm about to answer. So, no, it wasn't just about us, but we made
that,
it about
right.
us.
Okay.
You
okay.
dig what I'm saying? Because,
I do.
You know, because when you're dealing with children and you're dealing with the policies that affect children and family and
okay.
mothers, you know, as young, progressive young men and women, we were about that, you know, about the social change and empowerment of ourselves. because we dealt with the brokenness in our communities.
Yeah, I get that part, but I also know something else, brother, and it is every time we try to do something or do something, and I mean as you using your phrase, and I'm going to say highly melanated people, whenever we step up to do something for ourselves, then here we go with all these other people getting involved, riding off of what we start, and then create all of these reasons as to, well, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm saying, you know, that I get that, but at some point we got to call it the way it is and deal with it accordingly. The Million Man March was very specific. It was right on point. The Million Woman March was also. And the Million Youth March was with Dr. Khaled.
There was 2 million youth marches going on at that time.
Yeah,
remember,
that's
there was one in Atlanta.
And I'm saying again.
There was one. Okay.
Right, and that was to usurp him. I know. I'm very familiar.
No, I don't think it was to usurp him. I think there was two different organizations of two similar but two different organizations of people organizing.
Brother, at that time.
Well, you know, reason why I say that because I have insight to that. Sister.
Me too.
Sister, and that's the reason why I know Sister A.T. Muhammad, and that was Minister Jabril's daughter.
And again, as you know, there were some internal things going on because Dr. Khaled at that point was no longer connected to the nation. And so
There was some things going on at that time that there was some splinterness, but there was some healing out of it, and there was some cohesiveness that came back out of that. You feel what I'm saying? So, you know, it was when you talk about nation building, we done had these splinters and splits. You know, I mean, you had organizations fall out with, in leadership. And, you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when the nation fell, he had to step back up to rebuild it. And he sacrificed. Just like Noble Prophet Noble Drew Ali, he had a split in the temples. We could go back there.
Well, there's
always been internal strife, especially when you had adversaries like...
Particularly when you're dealing with religion. Particularly when you deal with religion, so-called religion, because it's really designed to do that. And if we don't even learn that in this day and age, none of that has kept us from being divided. And there's a reason for that. You see, and so, again, until we start dealing with some real truth, that's why when we spoke earlier, brother, I said, my focus is about principles that are universal, not what somebody thinks should be, how they should pray, when they should pray, all of that right there. We done had a good 400 years of seeing up close and personal what that does and how it's done. Now, we can keep doing that and advocating that, and that's fine, right?
Well,
However, I'm going to
be fair to say this, though. We all had to learn how to walk. We all had to learn to say our ABCs. And, you know, and I hear what you're saying. You know, we all had to have a systematic process. Even in principles, it undergoes a process, a systematic rites of passage. It's you know, the difference is, to me, is how they instituted the learning system to bring forth the learning curve. Rockefeller and them did not put this school system together for us to learn self-determination in our principles.
But you see
what I'm saying? I'm calling out the source of it.
No doubt. But I got to go a little beyond or before them and deal with what we know in terms of people. And no, I didn't say a way of life or a natural, normal, regular, universal way of being. I'm saying institutional. I should have said this word first. My apologies. Institutional. That's right. See, I'm very specific. But I don't want to take over the mic. We need to bring some other people in, brother. And I appreciate. Let me just go on record. I appreciate everything that you just said. I love you for everything you just said. This is how conversations need to be. And I thank you. You know what I'm saying?
And I appreciate you having me because, you know, my perspective, see, I've looked at it and I analyzed it in many different ways. And, you know, self-determination is about self-preservation, self-love.
Sure.
But it's not selfless.
That's selfish.
It's selfless, you know. It's giving up of yourself, your time, your energy, your blood, your sweat, your tears, your intellect to make a progressive move so we can move forward to this village that we're talking about constructing. And if we don't see it from a not just a spiritual based approach, a methodical based approach, because your spirituality guards your thoughts.
Okay. Well, again, I have a totally kind of different approach and thought process. With some of that I'm totally in agreement with. I teach now in such a way that I tell or direct my sisters, I tell them to be selfish. See, I don't use the psychology that the enemy gave us in certain ways. From a psychological purpose and reason. And again, it is interesting because you almost kind of hit on what I indicate with particularly our sisters, and it's this: be selfish, be self-determined, be self-reliant, be self-sufficient, and deal with self-defense. You see, so I don't let other, you know, people or things beyond a certain point kind of, you know, structure thought processes. And again, this, as we proceed, for me, is what we have to begin to do, and that is to disrupt the present processes of thought. Lastly, with that said, our great Dr. Francis Quest Welsing and Baba Neely Fullett, there's one thing that they say, my brother, that I will constantly embrace and also present to others, and it is this. If you do not understand the system of white supremacy, for lack of a better word, everything else will only confuse you. Now, we're going to bring you some other folks. Caller, you are at 2274. Your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day, and we invite you into the dialogue.
Okay, Hotep, Empathy, to you and your guests. Greetings to both of you.
Greetings, Brother Adrian, Baton Rouge in the house.
I also would like to mention... How you doing, sir? I just also would like to interject one of the issues that we as a people have to address if we're going to deal with on a collective level. If we have people in leadership that can't organize together, then how is it we'll be able to lead our people anyway? Because usually the problem is sometimes it's, we have to learn that even if we disagree on certain points, therefore, we could still work together. But a lot of times in our community on a collective level, we have not strategized that yet. So what I've decided to do is take the handful of people that want to recycle economical black businesses and move forward with them. But it's very challenging when you have people who supposed to have the light and we have disagreements among each other, man, say, well, we can't work together, or because I disagree with this church, or because I disagree with this particular philosophical persuasion, I won't even work with them. But those same individuals will work with people like Planned Parenthood, for example. when you have now in Cobra that's fighting for reparations for black people that's now kind of being turned into another 501c3, we have some serious critical issues that we have to address a lot of times on the individual level. But I'm in total agreement with the Nation of Independent People, and we have to continue to move forward, but we do have to answer these questions.
Well, and thank you for that, Brother Adrian. But as I said, and I'm going to yield to the brother and give him, let him do his comment. As I said before, two things. We have got to go to the next level, and as often people have said, and deal with raising the frequency. And so what does that mean in real time? For example, as I said earlier, I don't call myself a leader. I don't do that because in this day and age, now maybe years ago, you know, it was cold. But in this day and age, you can't be, that's a totally different breed of other different breed of people. And here's a perfect example as to why. See, fortunately, because of our ancestors, our great scholars, historians who gave us information, if we're not going to use the information that they gave us, then we are not only dishonoring them, we are furthering the demise of ourselves. For example, leader, that should tell you, in this day and age, it should tell you right then and there there's something wrong. Why do I say that? Because the first four letters of the word leader is led. Now one can, in their mind, say, as it has been, you know, well, this means someone is kind of helping you or whatever. But in the aspect of science, what is lead? LEAD. What is lead in another realm of reality?
That means you're following somebody else.
Nope. I said in another realm of reality. Lead.
Well, lead is
an
a element. If I may inject, lead is a form of
it's a
metal.
That's right, and
it can be a poison substance, or it can be a conductor.
Exactly.
Of energy.
But again, see, this is why I said, that's why the word black and all that, this is why I said utilize things in the context that is appropriate. So looking at how our so-called leaders are, the more appropriate definition or connection would be more to lead poisoning. See, if we're not a little more specific about some, this next generation is going to really be even more confused because we're not defining, and again, I'm not talking about getting into semantics. I'm talking about just calling a spade, or a Negro pen, or whatever. Making it clear, as Dr. Khaled would say, and Brother Malcolm would say, make it plain. The language simple to the degree where you understand exactly what I'm saying. You don't need Webster or Oxford. You know exactly what I'm saying. See, and we've got
well,
to get...
Can
to
I chime in on that one?
Absolutely. You got it, Brother. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I would like to say this, sister. You know, I kept going back to the, we all had to learn ABC. And we all had to learn how to speak and speak the English. And it had a defining meaning to it. Now, we talk about frequency and all those things, you know. I agree that we, you know, I'm going to put it like this. My expression is to a person when I meet them is to do what's right. Tell the truth. Do what's good. Treat them how I want to be treated. You feel what I'm saying? So the expressions that we give should be in principle, like you said, with the principle, but in the work of that principle. You see what I'm saying? And so I wanted to chime into what the brother was saying when he talking about dealing with each other, when we got to learn to agree with each other, even if we don't, and even if we disagree with each other. How do we keep the movement going without letting a disagreement destroy it? You feel what I'm saying? And it can be done, you know. We got to learn to treat each other fair and equitable, have mutual benefit, have a mutual understanding, you know, to, from the perspective that we share with each other, you know, or with each other, you know. And it can be done. My motto was build with those who build with you.
So, but that's what we were saying earlier. I mean, that was already a fundamental given. But at the same time, brother, here's why it is so important that we have these dialogues, because what you just said, again, is kind of the pie in the sky theory, meaning what we need to do is, okay, we got that part. We've been hearing that for 100 years. We need to do this. We need to do that. But here's the thing. What is the modi operandum? Because we can all agree what we need to do. We need more unity. We need more this. We need. But then when you say, well, what plan or what are you suggesting or proposing that be an actual action? Because all the other stuff has been said over and over. And at some point, it's like you said, well, we have to know the ABCs. Well, yeah, that is true. But, you know, I dare say that there's a possibility that at some point we was a little beyond that, obviously. That's why they're still trying to figure out how them pyramids happened.
Yeah.
So we keep staying on the level of, well, you know, we got to be, do it like this and do it. I'm like, yo, no. For, you know, I remember growing up and I remember thinking certain ways and you know, whatever. And it was people that were saying to me that I shouldn't. So I end up stagnating myself as a child.
Yeah.
Because the people around me either didn't comprehend or whatever the reason was. So I was forced to lessen my thought processes, my capabilities, because the people around me said that I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm saying that in my particular situation. I've heard others say similar things as well, and we see it with some of the youth today. So I'm saying now, in this day and age, some of us have got to go to this next level.
And I hear you on that.
I hear you on that.
But you know, that next level, a lot of us talk about that next level, and there has to be a process behind that next level, too.
Right. That's why I've got something called the Black Print Agenda 25.
there's different processes of, you know, learning. Different processes of, you know, some people who go to school do the traditional. Some people do the Montessori. Some people, then they got the cognitive behavior theory type of thing jumping off. Well, when I was studying with master teacher, he created a process, you know, and created his own alphabet and ultimately his own language. So
absolutely, that's what I'm talking about.
But listen to what I'm saying. So I'm talking about Malachi Z. York. I'm bringing
right.
You feel what I'm saying, and you know,
yeah.
Understanding. You know, that we were always the creator of a process, a spiritual process, a physical process, and they work hand in hand. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no,
so,
I get it.
You know,
what I'm saying is, brother, and again, and I'm going to leave it at that for now, I yet to know of there being any recognition of a sister, a mother, in terms of these ideologies or these, you know, whatever. And I find that very interesting, and I dare say, not now, but at some point, we're going to have this conversation, because isn't it ironic or not that we cannot seem to recognize or give any credence to a system of learning or understanding when it comes to wisdom and knowledge, you see. And I'm saying again that part of the problem that we are facing today has to do also with a certain type of I won't say energy, but mentality that has dominated us as a people in whatever segment of resistance that is. So that's a whole nother level and conversation that we're going to have to engage in at some point, that there's an imbalance even amongst ourselves. And I'm talking about the so-called learned or in-depth or adept. There is an imbalance that we must begin to examine. Not tonight, y'all, but at some point. If we're going to do the truth. You understand what I'm saying? This is why it's taking so long. Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
and
that's one of the reasons it's taking so long.
Yes.
Huh?
Absolutely, Brother Adrian. Absolutely.
That's why it's taking so long because let's look at the things at the, for example, Black Panthers, where 70%, according to what I heard, 70% of the chapters were led by women. And then we have sometimes in our communities where you have movements that are led by women, you know, sometimes because the men weren't there or the men were murdered and things like that. Winnie Mandela never got the credit that Nelson Mandela got. When we talk about Marcus Garvey, Henrietta Vinton Davis, who was a key part of that movement. So, yes, we have to address those entities in our community. And one of the reasons it's taken so long is because we have that process and all these different processes and underlying issues that we have not addressed among each other, sometimes as individuals.
Okay.
Yeah, and all of it's got to be a healing process. Let's be real.
Yeah.
It's been brokenness on both sides, men and women.
Yeah.
Men been beat down, castrated, women been raped, pillaged. The whole village been
killed.
Some
of us don't even know each other's roles anymore as men and women.
Right. So, you know, there has to be a healing. And understand that within that process that it's okay that we learn to, you know, we've been at each other all the time. We intellectually prophesize ourselves against each other all the time. And sometimes those intellectual debates or intellectual engagements, they could be productive. But where it becomes unproductive is when we start tearing each other down and trying to discredit each other. And that's the things that we have to work on avoiding in this type of movement that we're
about. Real quick, family, those of you who are on the internet stream, you need to switch over to the podcast line because you're going to lose your internet stream in about 3 minutes. So switch over to the podcast line, which is, of course, the 319-527-6189, because we're going to continue this conversation via podcast, but you're going to have to come on the telephone line for that, unless you have a line connected to your computer that does that. And, of course, there are a few people that do. But I just want you to know you only have a few minutes to switch over to our podcast line so that you can continue this conversation or continue to join us. Okay. With that said, I'm just going to – and Carla, we're coming to you at 2816. We're coming to you in 1 minute, but I just want to do the sidebar. The brothers just said are absolutely correct. Only thing I say too is why you think some of that's happening, that we keep doing that. See, again, utilizing systems, concepts, and other things plays into some of what both of you just said. And so when you begin to examine some of those fundamentals, where did it come from? When did it come into existence? How did it come into existence? Because here's something that's fundamental, and most folks are not going to like this, but I'm going to say it. Anything that advocates you, me, or someone to either destroy, enslave, murder, or whatever, or other entities, and they do this under the guise of God, you need to think very carefully about that. And I'm going to leave it at that. This is a whole other conversation that at some point we will have to think dealing with truth will free us. The truth will free us to some degree.
Right. I agree with that.
But we're not even going to examine those truths and ask those questions and then and not just intellectually, right? Because, again, I truly believe that being an intellectual don't make you intelligent.
No,
so that, right. So we ain't talking about that. We ain't talking about that, right? But anyway, I want y'all to stay right there. We're going to go to caller at 2816. 2816, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Living on the front line.
Yes, indeed, every day.
All day, born on the front line. But sister, I'm going to just say something. No disrespect to your guest, the brother that's on the line, but you know, I don't want to use the word rude, but I'll use another, a better term. Very rude. When he was talking, over you. I mean, he has to learn. We all have to learn things. I got stuff I got to work on. Let me just say that first. Okay, I stand accused. I got things. Brother, you got to work on listening to people and not overtalk them. You can't overtalk everybody. If we was in a meeting, I would not want you in the meeting because you're going to dominate it. You're going to overtalk everybody. And that's not fair. You have to learn to listen, brother, and hold your peace. You have knowledge, Dr. York, Malachi, Delev. You know different things. But, brother, you ain't the one. Okay, I ain't the one. The one ain't even came yet. But my point is, you have to learn to respect women. You don't respect, you don't talk to sister. Yo, everything she's going to talk, you talk. Yo, blah, blah. I mean, you can't do that. Not in communicating. Communicating is you give, I give. Any proverbs, uno poquito para me, uno poquito para me. That means a little bit for you, a little bit for me. But you want to dominate. I mean, I know you are an alpha male. You know, it's obviously, you know, but you can't dominate. No, not for him. Now, let me tell you what I was going to say about respecting. You gave some things about the black woman. I didn't hear surreal, very surreal. Brothers, this is for the brother and some women. Brothers, we have to worship our black women. First of all, Sister Empress, how do you feel about Dr. Ben?
Oh, I love Dr. Ben.
Okay, good. That opened the door for my next statement. Dr. Ben said, heaven is between a black woman's legs. Oh, you better hold on. You Google it. Google it. Dr. Ben, heaven is between a black woman's legs. One of his lectures. Google it. Don't take my word for it. I know pervert calling up here.
Oh,
you
no.
Know
me,
sister,
we know that.
You know me very well. Google
Dr.
Ben, heaven is between a black woman's legs. Heaven is on earth, and that's the black woman, brother. We need to worship our women. They carried us for 9 months. They changed our diapers. They fed us. They could have protected us. They put a roof over our head. We should not honor, worship the black woman. Not to mention what heaven is.
Can I chime in for a second? Can I respond, please?
No, see, there you go. You're cutting over me. You're cutting over me. Okay, but let me finish my point.
Can I chime in for a second?
When I
say
I'm finished, I'm finished.
Because you're critiquing me. So it's only time that I can rebuttal.
I want that brother in the meeting.
My position.
Because he's always going to respond and say things. He has to learn how to respect others when they speak. Okay, now you can speak, sir.
Okay, let me say I disagree with you and you're incorrect, brother. Let me say this, please, because I'm speaking now. I'll let you speak.
No, you didn't. I did not interrupt
her. I was trying to make a point. And
speak on, brother.
During
keep
during
it moving.
During,
you
during,
you
during,
being disrespectful to the
sister.
But you speak on.
Wait a minute, please. Can I talk real quick?
During our exchange. What's what you're trying to say? See, there you go. You kind of understand me when I surrender.
Okay,
Speak on, brother.
Okay, I'm speaking, brother. I was speaking. You're the one interjecting. So I'm trying to defend myself on the basis of the premises. I gave and I do respect Empress. I have not disrespected her or said anything disrespectful or interrupted. We both exchanged. So it was no combative dialogue. It's intellectual exchange. And we took it like I was disrespecting her. I don't think that was the right correct analysis of that exchange that we was having.
Okay, well, you were disrespecting her. You was very disrespectful to her because you overrode her, brother, in your words. If if we was in a meeting, I don't know what you in the meeting. Because you're going to dominate it. You're going to overrule it. You're going to chat. You don't let nobody else talk. And anybody else to feel the same way I feel, please call up and express that to the Sister Empress. Because she's loving. She's very loving. She let you go that way. But me, my nerves is boiling.
Oh, thank you, my
Listen
brother.
To you.
Good thing.
But you have to learn, brother. I'm going to try to come down on you. I'm giving you a lesson for you, brother. This is for you. I've learned that lesson, sir.
Brother, I respect my wife. I got a wife. I got a wife I respect. I got daughters I respect. I got for you to say I don't disrespect somebody, you don't know me like that. For
you
to make that judgment.
Your wife. I like to be your wife. See what she has to say, brother.
My wife is right here.
Call in.
We get ready to move on to the next.
My wife is right here. You can talk to her. She's right here.
I don't want to talk to your wife, brother.
Okay. So I
want to talk to the people. I don't want to talk to your
Hold up. Okay, there we go. So we're going to move on to the next segment, family. Okay. Fortunately, I have control of these boards because when I try to interject to both of you so we can move on, you all kept talking. So we're going to move forward to the next final segment of tonight. Brother Adrian, you still there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I know you got
yes,
to talk
ma'am.
Here, but... Okay.
Yeah. Okay. On Dr. Ben, see, this is another thing because the brother brought up Dr. Ben. One of the questions I would have for us is in his latter years, why didn't we take care of him better? Why did he have to pass in a home?
There you go. See, now we're getting back to the real nitty gritty, and it is, again, and not just with Dr. Ben, but also with Queen Mother Moore. Queen Mother Moore was in a nursing home. And died. So, you know, again, these are some of the things that we have to begin to look at and examine and do something about. It can't just be, well, we need to come together. We need to do. Yeah, we do. We got that part. But we also need to take care of some things that we can take care of. And lastly, and I'm going to come back to our brother to get his closing comments because he was our guest for this evening, and we're going to come back to him in a few moments. But here is something else that needs to be said, and it's really, really important, again, to make sure that our elders and our teachers and others that, you know, names that we had, we got to take better care of them or at least plan accordingly, needless to say. And so we're going to have some other conversations about that in the very near future. But what I'd like to do, because we got to get ready to close out, I want to go back to brother. Hold on, let me open up your mic again, my brother. Hold on. Okay, I think you should be able to join back in now.
Okay, my apologies.
Okay,
it's
okay. I'd like for our people to be able to exchange the information and the views. It's just that when I come in and say that's enough, then it's enough, okay?
I did want to apologize because the brother was attacking my character, and he don't know me.
Right.
First and foremost, I did not make any disrespectful
interjections. Actually, I respectfully said, excuse me, let me chime in, begging pardon. You feel what I'm saying? So I don't never try to overpower nobody and overtalk nobody. And I do have respect. I have a wife. I've been with over 8 years. I have daughters. I have 21 brothers and sisters. So
all right.
I have the utmost respect for women.
All right.
And authority of women. My mother was authoritarian. You know.
So let's do this. We're going to get ready to close out, and I want to give you the opportunity to, you know, to give your comments, your final, your closing comments for tonight. I wanted to give you the opportunity to do that since you were one of our invited guests for tonight. And so with that, you know, based on our conversation and certainly, you know, we're going to have future conversations, needless to say. Again, I want to thank Brother Adrian. I want to thank Brother Mel. That's who we were just talking with, Brother Mel. And also, I want to thank those who, you know, folks last week made pledges to support, and they did. So, again, Brother Mel, our sister in Ohio, you know, Sister Kenya, I want to thank all that, you know, provided for our $2 Tuesday. Give thanks to all of you as we get ready for this 26-year anniversary. Before we go back to the brother for his closing comments, we want to remind everyone that October 1st, we officially kick off our One in a Million campaign. If the Honorable Marcus Garvey and others could get a million members 100 years ago, I don't want to hear it, sisters, about what we can't do now, right? We need to be able to get now in this next year a million members so that we can do what we need to do in our communities. There's vacant properties in our communities that we can utilize to educate our children, to have health facilities and other things in our communities. We can do that, and we should. So, again, we're saying to our sisters in particular, brothers, be so kind to get a membership for a sister in your life, in your circle, in your community, in your household. Membership starts at $1. Now, tell me what excuse somebody got for that. Because if you can live with yourself with that one, cool. Okay. But we're about doing the business that has to get done now. And so we're going to tell you more about it next week, about the component for sisters. Do business with the Righteous and Divine USA, United Sisters of Africa. We have a network that's being put in place. Thank you, Brother David. He is our web designer. He is making it available to our members who want to deal with business. They will have their own web page on our website if you're a member for that. There's other types of membership, but for the business component, which is going to be critical in some of our next advancements. Lastly, for those sisters who want to invest, our brother Shamari 5 years ago gave us an excellent assignment or suggestion. He said, our people, of course, we have children. Mothers, of course, many of them do not make their baby food for the children, for the babies. And we understand that. So in the meantime, until that happens, can we produce our own baby food and market it? The answer is yes, if we want to. So when we say we got membership coming, again, it, some of this should just be just because. But to let you know what our some of our focuses is, one of our brothers, big up to Brother Shamari, one of our brothers in support, he suggested that look and examine how we need, how it can be that we produce our own baby food. We have farmers We have growers. We've got a whole bunch of stuff going on all over the country. Why would we not do something that needs to be done in our communities, meaning baby food? Why does Gerber and Heinz and all of them people have to be the only ones that produce something that our people need every day? So those one things you're going to hear us talk about in the next week when we have Million Woman World March and, of course, Million Woman Week. But we're taking a whole month, y'all, so get ready. Anyway, that's the sidebar. Just wanted to share that with you. Let's go back to our brother, get his closing comments, and then we're going to get ready to close this session out. Brother, you got it.
Okay. You know, I just want to say I love my people, first and foremost. And I do believe in the power of we, not just I, singular, but we. I do believe in that we have come to a point that we can accomplish all those things that we need to accomplish and build our own communities in the village. And we're actually in that process of getting ready to actually do that. We're in planning stages right now as we speak. Like I communicated with you on the phone, me and some other brothers and sisters are working to formulate on this estate, and it's going to be somewhere in Texas. So it's some planning stages going on, and yes, these disagreements that we have are going to happen. You know, it's just, and we got to learn to be respectful of each other and learn how to work with each other regardless of our different ideology perspectives and our different spiritual practices or religious practices. You know, and that's just my take on it, and I believe that, and I support your initiative, my sister. I think it's very well, it's overdue.
Mm-hmm.
You feel?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And going back to Dr. John Henry Clark, I mean, he made it very clear. He said, we're not producing anything for the most part. So, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to put that in there, that, again, we listened to our elders and our ancestors. We listened. And some of us are like, this is what they said to do. When are we going to do what they said? And Dr. John Henry Clark and others said this. And so the other thing, and then I'm going to go back to the brother real quick, but the other thing that we're going to be producing is our own lingerie. Sisters love lingerie. Brothers do too. Y'all like it for the sisters, right? Why are people going to Victoria's Secret?
Yeah,
or
you're right about
where else they going? You understand? I mean, this is real stuff. And so I already had the samples of our own lingerie. These are some of the things we're getting ready to bring forward. We're not beggars. We know how to do certain things. And again, in asking people to support, it is not because we're depending on that. It is because you need to do the right thing, period. We already figured out how we're going to make our money. And we know that sisters love them some lingerie, you see. And this is something that you wear every day. How do we come up with this? Again, Dr. Clark. Everybody wears underwear of some sort. So why are we talking about producing the things that people use on a day-to-day basis? And so we've come up with the way to do that. So again, for those who are interested, these are some of the symposiums, conversations that we're going to be having next month. Okay? We're going to close out with our brother and family. Again, if you want more information about anything that I've talked about tonight, please feel free to reach out to us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We have two new email addresses. One of them is official MWWM@gmail.com. Again, Million Woman World March. It's more than a march, y'all. All right? Trust me when I tell you. It's more than an event. All right? My brother, I thank you again. You know, let people know oh, we got to bring you back because we got to talk about your product that you have available and that we're looking to partner with. That's the other thing we want to share with you, family. We're going to be an outlet, as our brother Ken Bridges helped us to become more familiar with the Mata Network. We will now be very clear in being able to connect the brothers and sisters that make various types of things, manufacture, produce, whatever, their own whatever. We want to be an apparatus to market that. So when the brother comes back the next time, we're going to talk about his line of jewelry that is custom, handmade, handcrafted. Right, brother?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. My wife, we're called Tribal Cloth and Village. You know, we could be seen on Facebook. We're on Facebook. Also, I'll be on Instagram. My name is Sifa Nabiru Amasa Bay. So if anybody want to connect with me and see some of our custom-made jewelry, you know, Tribal Cloth Village jewelry, you know, I would love to send it to them and let them see the pictures. You, my sister, we like to bless you with something too as well. Whatever your favorite color is, I'm gonna show you some pictures. You just let me know what you like. You know, we'll get it to you.
I say, give thanks, greatly appreciate it, and please give. My greetings to your wife, and thank her for me as well. One more time, give out your Instagram and Facebook information so folks can go check you out, because that's what we're talking about doing, supporting one another, connecting to our artists. We're planning to put out our own music. I'll tell you more about that later, because when we start traveling, coming to your city, we'll be doing recruitment and auditions, so that we can put out our own music. Folks talking today about, oh, you know, what you hear on the radio, blah, 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 but you ain't coming up with what we're going to do about it. That's what our position is. What are we talking about doing about whatever? And so we have a whole program with our Blackprint. See, the other folks say, it's so easy for folks to say blueprint. You know, that's so common, and, you know, everybody's okay with that. We're not. That's not working for us. So we're trying the black print. All right. We're defining that. So my point is, in music theory and concept, we know there's jazz. From that came something called bebop. And then, of course, there's a transformation into R&B and other genres now. And we're saying from hip-hop to my art. How y'all like that? Come with our
sounds
own sound. we ain't playing. That's why when I say certain things, frequency and all that, I'm talking about something that we get ready to show people. You see, we studied Motown. We studied, the very Memphis and other cities that produce, New Orleans, that produce serious sounds of music. I'm in Philadelphia, of course, Kenny Gamble and the sound, you know, the sound of Philly and all that. We've studied these areas and genres of music and exchange of vibrational, interactions, so that we now can come up with our own, for this day and age, our own innovations. Again, we can keep telling about the problems, y'all, but if you ain't trying to step up and come up with some possibilities of how we're going to do some of these things to shift the paradigm, then unfortunately folks will continue to be part of the problem and not the solution. All right, family, we're going to close out. This has been a wonderful session. I want to thank Sister Tawanda Jones again for coming in. As you can tell, she's continued to be strong and diligent, you know, in the quest for her brother and others, you know. And again, we all agree on certain things, and that's how we're going to move forward. We're not only just going to say this is what we need to do, we're going to give some ways to do it now. And you'll be hearing more about that as we proceed. So, again, I want to thank our brother Fisa. I want to thank Brother Mel. And, of course, Brother Adrian, always thank our brother. And, again, Sister Tawanda. And all of you that tuned in for this evening and that tune in regularly, big ups to all of you. We got some other Baltimore people in the house. Greetings to you all. And, of course, our Sister Kenya is over in Ohio. She just chimed in a little while ago. And, again, family, we're on the move. So stay in touch. Stay in contact with what's going on with the Million Woman World March. And I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised as we come forward. And not only bringing forward the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide, but how about the first nations being formulated and developed by our sisters? That's different. All right, family, we're out again. I'm going to say this one thing. As you all know, if there's no justice, there's no what, y'all? What you say,
no
Brother
peace.
Adrian?
No peace.
No peace. You got that right. And so we are striving for that, holistically speaking. But in the meantime, we say pomoja to the shinda. Together we shall win. Again, thank you, Brother Asifa and Brother Adrian. Peace to you all, and talk to y'all black next week.